Welcome to episode 2 in our Copywriting for Websites series. In this episode, Ella and I are going to give you some tips on how to ensure that the copy in your website will align with your target audience. Cracking Copy is a marketing and copywriting podcast where we lift the lid on writing for business and read between the lines of effective copy.
This is a podcast for creative entrepreneurs and savvy business owners like you who understand the value that great copy can bring to their bottom line.
We dive into a different aspect of writing for business in each episode, debunk the myths about how we should write, and explore the ways that writing can be fun, conversational, and creative, while also being high impact for serious results.
So listen, laugh, and learn with us, Ella Hoyos and Minnie McBride, as we share our words and wisdom in each snack-sized episode. Expect some lightbulb moments, interesting guests, and practical takeaways as we crack the copy code together.
So, you up for this, Ella?
Totally up for this, Minnie.
Totally. Excellent. So before we begin, I think we must ask you really to revisit your purpose. So I think knowing your end goal from the get-go will help you to craft great content, because everything that you write will resonate and have purpose. So the other thing is, the purpose is actually the action that you want your visitor to take.
Yeah.
So get really clear about what is it that you want them to do and how you're going to do it.
So what do you mean by how you're going to do it?
Well, how are you going to do it? Are you going to inform them? Are you going to entertain them, persuade them to take action? So I think, again, much of that is going to depend on who your target audience is and understanding them, which is the key rule of copywriting, really, isn't it? The first rule of copywriting, know who you're writing for.
Exactly. It's always key, because you can't be everything to everyone. You do need to choose. And you do need to understand what they're trying to achieve so that you can write effectively for them. Because if you don't know what they want, then you could be writing any old crap, let's face it. And it actually has no impact. And we don't want that. We want our words to have impact. We want them to help people. And we need to know who those people are and what their goals are.
So exactly.
Serve them as best we can.
So to write for them, we need to know who they are. And I think we do bang on about this quite a lot with the customer analysis and research, but you do need to do it.
It's the first step in the process, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's not good enough just to make educated guesses. And so many of us start there because we haven't got time to do the full research, and we haven't got time to interview people, or perhaps we don't really want to ask them and we think we know it anyway. But if you work on those assumptions, then you're not really going to get to the nub of it. So I think you do have to go back to basics a little bit and do a bit of research and just set some time aside to get that work done.
Exactly.
If you haven't done it for a while, just revisit. It might just be a refresher. It might just be a few new calls that you need to make to check in. Make sure that, you've done your due diligence and you're up to date with where your people are at and what they're thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, obviously it depends on your time that you've got and the size of your company, but we're talking about surveys, the voice of customer interviews. So, understanding the kind of language that they're using when they're talking about their pain points and about, that the area that your business is in.
Yeah. So that means, I mean, voice of customer, as I see it, that means like getting on a call, a Zoom call, recording a conversation with your ideal client or prospect, and actually using the words that they say, mirroring that back to them in the copy. So that's what we mean by voice of customer. But also you can get that information by, desk-based research. If you know where your ideal customers and clients are hanging out online, there might be forums, there might be discussion groups that they're involved in. So you can get data, raw data about what people think or feel about a certain issue by going on to, let's say, a Reddit forum or
Facebook groups are really good for that, aren't they? And also generally social media, and see the kind of language that people are using in their comments that they're doing. And also you can create then from the research that you've got some customer personas, and you can include things like demographics, socioeconomics, behaviours, people's age and gender, just so that you've got that sort of written down and at the forefront of your mind before you start writing.
Ideally, you know, you can picture that person in your mind, picture what they look like, what they're feeling before you start writing. It really just helps focus you, doesn't it?
But the other thing, which sounds a bit cheaty, but it's actually a really good, is competitor analysis, and just see what they're producing. I mean, not saying that you copy it, but just how is it structured, tone and the style, and that might help you to identify gaps in your own strategy. So you might have your strategy, but then it might get, oh, I could do that, or I hadn't thought of that, or we do this better than they do.
Where can you pit yourself against or plug a competitor's gap? Because you know about that, and that's something that you think is missing from their side of you. So yeah, vital actually, and a really good jumping off point as well to give you some inspiration to get going is to see what, you know, find the people you aspire to, find the people that you who do the same sort of thing but different, and see what they're saying, and just see how you can position yourself against them.
Yeah. Exactly. So once you've got all this info, you've then got to start writing.
Yeah. So you've got to synthesize it and make some sense of it, haven't you? And map out your positioning. And then I think then once you understand your audience, then you can start to think about your offers and the copy that describes it.
But you, as you were saying earlier, you can't be all things to all people. So, and also you only got one website. So one of the things that I think that you were quite keen to talk about were the different types of decision maker, and therefore whether that's different and how you can do that cohesively. So because not everyone that lands on your website is the same, is it? They, in terms of their buying power, but also in terms of where they are in the journey. I mean, they might never have heard from you before, or they may know exactly who you are.
I think we can make some assumptions though about the people who land on our websites. They are product aware. They know about the product or the service, broadly speaking, that we're selling. Otherwise, why would they be on our website in the first place? So they must have heard about us somewhere, whether it's from social media or perhaps reading something online or listening to a podcast, but something has got them to our website. And yes, it could be chance, but let's hope that they are product aware and they're here because they roughly know what it is that we do and they want to find out more. You know, are we the right person for them? But remember, you know, as a business owner, we are here to make some money through our products and service offerings. And it does make sense to think about all our visitors in terms of how ready they are to make a purchase from us. So when we think about our website visitors, let's, you know, consider them as prospects, prospective customers. We assume they're product aware, like I just said, and we have an, you know, they've got an idea of what we are offering and how we might, they might know how we could help them solve a particular problem they have. But what we can, these people have different decision-making modalities. And I think that's what I wanted to touch on here. Are these people coming to our website, are they more logical or are they emotional in their decision-making? Do they make quick decisions or slow decisions? Because while we can't be everything to everyone, we do need to make sure that our website does help all those different kinds of decision makers. We need to design it in such a way that it caters for the people who take a long time to make a decision and who need to do all the research and who need to read word for word your website, and contrast that with the people who just want to make a quick snap decision. Can you present your information clearly and to the point so that they can see, yep, good fit, okay, let's go, or, you know, no, this isn't right for me, I'm off. But, you know, we need to make sure that our copy on our website helps all those different people. And not only is it whether they're quick or slow decision makers, you know, are they emotional decision makers or are they very logical? So if you're emotional as a decision maker, then, and many people are like this, actually make decisions based on how they feel. And then, you know, do I like the look of this person? Can I work? Can I see myself working with this person? Do I trust them? And then you know, if the answer is yes, 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 then you will back up your decision to work with that person with logic. Okay, yeah, well, it's the right price and this is the right time for me and all of this. But the decision was already made based on gut feel.
Yeah.
And then you've got the logical decision makers who start with logic. And so it will be wrong to assume that everybody is emotion first. I think that's what we're taught a lot of the time in marketing, you know, that people buy based on emotion and then back it up with logic later. But not everybody is like that.
No, not everyone. I mean, I am. I know that I am. But certainly, yes. I'm an emotional buyer.
Yeah, I think I am. But I'm very quick to back it up with a logical, a rational reason, even if that's completely fabricated based just to prove.
Well, justify. Yeah, it needs to be justified.
That's right. Justify the purpose. So my husband says that I'm like that and he's the logical one who will make sensible decision based on logic. Does it make logical sense to them? And then maybe they'll touch on the emotion and do I trust this person? And then come back to, well, it makes most sense. I'm going to let my head rule my heart on this one. Then you've got the fast pace. We've talked about that. They'll choose you or they'll eliminate you on the first visit to your website. So make sure they can get what they need to know and while they're on there.
Get some nitty gritty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. And a slower paced decision maker may, you know, visit you once and then come back a few days later and then come back again after they've shopped around a bit. You know, they are much more
methodical.
Thank you. In their decision making and coherent too, perhaps. So despite, you know, your best market research and all your educated hypotheses and guesses, the truth is you don't know which type of decision makers are going to be landing on your website. And so when it does come to writing the copy and creating a good user experience, it does help if you've considered all these bases and have a plan to accommodate all these different types. So just going back to it, an emotional decision maker, when they come to your website, they're looking for the who and the why. You know, yes. They want to know your story. They want to know your purpose, why you set up in business, that sort of thing. They want to feel the passion behind your business. You know, can they trust you and can they trust your team to deliver what they need? They're going to go with gut feel. And then the logical decision makers, they really want to know exactly what you do and what they're going to get from working with you. So it's all the what's. What can you do for me? So if you lead with clear benefits, directly tied to your named features, keep your copy really concise and tight and support any claims that you make with facts, data, numbers, then that's really going to help and reassure them. With the fast decision makers, make sure that they can really navigate the site quickly and easily, quickly browse sections, keep your headlines really clear, bold, and your body copy crisp and to the point. And it really helps when you're doing your research if you can understand the job that these people are trying to do. What is it they're trying to do? What is their problem they're trying to solve? And then include information on this. And also you can use things like comparison charts and infographics and things like that, so they can quickly get a sense of context and grasp.
Yes, rather than having to read through a case study, for example.
Yeah, which they may not have time
or want to. And if no. Yeah.
So they're much more snappy, snap, snap. I'm picturing my husband here. He's very impatient. he just wants to get in, get out, move on. So can you do that with your website? And then I think I fall into this category a little bit, a slower decision maker. I need to do all the research. I might not have time to read a website word for word, but I will visit the blogs and I will look at the case studies and I will read the fine print, you know, and perhaps it will be over time. So I won't be making a snap decision. I just need to make sure this is right for me. I think I know that because when I go clothes shopping, I'm the sort of person that even if I find the ideal top in the first shop, I'll still want to then go around to a few more shops and just make sure that I'm not missing out on anything else. And then I'll come back 3 hours later to the shop and buy that thing that I saw the first time. But I just needed to make sure, and I just need to be definitely sure. So,
oh, I think I'm fast. I think I'm emotional and fast thinking about this. And the reason that I think that is I'm very much somebody that would read the TLDR, you know, the too long didn't read, the synopsis, rather than reading through everything else.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it's a fairly risky strategy, but then anything is risky, I guess, isn't it? I think a slow, methodical approach is probably head versus the heart, isn't it? Or the...
Well, again, it depends on the sort of gravity of the situation. How important is this in the long term? What are they buying? You know, if you're just buying, I don't know, some new cat biscuits, let's say, online, does it matter if they're the wrong brand? You know, does it matter? But, you know, if it's something, a big investment that you're making in a product or a service, then you'll perhaps take the slower, more cautious route. So,
I think that's true. And also, I think if someone has been recommended to you, you're perhaps going to make a quicker decision, because if maybe one or two people have said, you know, you need to use this company or this product's great, you're perhaps going to do less in depth. So as you say, you don't know who these people are coming to the site. So
that's it. If they have been referred, then that's a big tick on the trust marker, you know, and that's been done behind the scenes. They don't necessarily need that on your website because they've had that from a friend or a colleague or, you know, from that other source. So
But you still need to cater for those that haven't. I think that's the thing, isn't it? So then if we move on to the customer journey, and really how can you make sure that you're tapping into, you know, the people who, as we've just been talking about, who know nothing about you, and well as those who are aware of you. And so you've got to think about the journey and the hand-holding. So when the new person arrives on the website, you've got to be able to hold their hand and show them around the site and give them all the information that they need to find out about you. And also, as you say, taking allowance for the type of decision maker they might be. And then equally, you've got somebody who perhaps knows about your company or your services, and they need to be led also successfully, you know, quickly, but also with all the information that they need for the type of decision maker they, you know, they are.
To take the action you want them to take on your website, you need to guide them to that call to action, if you like.
Exactly. And obviously, if they are, it is a, you know, big investment and it's a complex service that you're offering, then, you know, you've got to think about the other things that these people might need. Do they need a case study? Do they need blogs? Do they need a portfolio to browse through? So these are the kind of things that when we talk about writing for your audience, these are the sort of things that you need to be thinking about. Mm-hmm. Don't forget your products as well, obviously. So I think if you're showing, as we're talking about case studies with a service, I think it's really good. People do like to see products being used or products in an environment. So if you're selling interiors, it's really nice to have, I don't know, you're selling napkins, it's nice to see the napkins sort of on a table rather than just like a napkin picture. So I think, you know, all this kind of, which obviously is that's obviously visual, but, you know, I do think these are things that you do need to be thinking about with perhaps user generated content. Maybe you've got some pictures of customers, or this is how customers styled this, or I think, you know, all of these things. No, have a customer page. This is what our customers think.
Yeah, that all helps to build trust as well, doesn't it? That it's social proof that somebody else has used this product effectively, so it can work for you too.
So, so really what we're saying is, how are you going to lead the customer to this information? I mean, in the last episode, we were talking about the wireframing, weren't we? And I think that's, you know, you're actually mapping out the journey that your customer is going to take on the website. And what do you need to do to make it a seamless, hassle-free, super informative and worth their investment, both their time to be on your site and the money, hopefully, that they're going to actually buy from you?
Yeah, I think it's important to be mindful and to check yourself, you know, in terms of you adding too much into your website. Actually, sometimes it's about removing things as well, removing friction and barriers, and just making it easy and seamless, to your point about being seamless and hassle free, what are the friction points that people come to when they're navigating your website, and can we make it easier by taking something away rather than adding more in?
Yes. And
we're going to come on to user experience a bit more, but
I think user experience, we could talk about that now, isn't it? Just a quick reminder, we did, Ella, you interviewed Claire Cunningham episode, which was UX writing for a great user experience, which was great.
Yes, that was back in January. Claire is WordCraft Claire on Instagram, and she writes websites with user experience in mind. So we had a good chat about that.
So it's worth popping back and having a listen, because actually I listened to that again before we recorded this. And it's a really, really useful listen with some really good tips. So what do we mean by user experience?
I think ultimately it's about the ease of use for the website visitor. More specifically, it's about how the words and design comes together to coach a conversion, to get people to take action. Because as the website owner, you're like a tour guide. I think this is going to come up frequently in a series. But, you know, you, as the website owner, you're touring your guests around your website. You need to take them by their virtual hand. You need to lead them where you want to lead them in a way that makes sense for them, and also that creates the desired outcome for you. So, you know, what is that action you want your people to take? And is that to make an inquiry? Is it to put in a phone call? Is it to book a service with you? Is it to buy a product? Or is it simply to stay on the page for longer, read more, because you want that search engine's crawlers to pick up the time on page and, you know, get more people to your site? So how are you going to do that as well? Well, how you help people navigate your site is really through clear signposting, good site navigation, a good foundational structure, and plenty of links and buttons to act as signposts with clear call to actions to help them move around in the way you want them to move around.
Yes, and quite often that the voice of the customer, you know, reflect that in your calls to action. So perhaps rather than saying, you know, click here for more info, you can make it much more personal, like, you know, join in the fun here, or I don't know, whatever it is that you're selling, but making it a little bit more appealing and resonate more with the person that's visiting your site.
Yeah, absolutely.
A good user experience journey taps into voice of customer and the needs of the customer. So I think one of the things that we mustn't forget here is readability in terms of formatting. So we're talking about headlines, aren't we, and white space, and not making it too clunky and too busy.
So dense, yeah.
Yeah. So that obviously is really important as well in terms of user experience.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was saying about the buttons and things, not just identifying the features, but using the language and concerns of the customer, and really tapping into the needs of the person that's visiting your website. Yeah, I think it was interesting in that, when reflecting on the Claire Cunningham interview, and she was reflecting on Airbnb as an excellent example of words that they use that align with the user experience architecture. And she creates enticing categories by using voice of customer. So I think she was saying they have big houses, you know, they have get togethers with family, and then it says, you know, make a feast here, and, you know, using sort of really enticing language.
So rather than just, you know, book a room, it's like,
yes,
have a feast with your family, because they're recognizing the job to be done. The job to be done of the customer is not to book a room, it's to have a family get together. That's the actual job that the customer's trying to do. So the buttons and the call to actions reflect that understanding. Or, you know, if it's to have a relaxing break from the stresses and strains of life, rather than just, you know, simply book a destination, you know, there's an ultimate goal that people are trying to achieve, and the booking the accommodation is just one small part of it, but the goal is bigger,
of course.
The job to be done is bigger than that. Yeah,
just booking it is easy, as you say, isn't it? It's the organization and having the fun, so that that's what people are looking forward to, isn't it?
Yeah.
So absolutely. I think it's so do have a listen if you haven't listened to that one already.
Mm.
What about testing? So once you've got your site, Ella, you know, one of the things that people, we always talk about test this and test that, but actually to get someone to test your website, the best way of doing that is with real people.
Yeah, absolutely. Often, I guess, overlooked because you just want to get your website up and running and then, you know, you think it's doing its job. But actually, yeah, to test your site and get some real feedback is invaluable. I think the stats go something like 55% of site visitors spending less than 15 seconds on your web page. So that's only a really small window to convince them to stay. But if you do some user testing, then you can analyse, you know, what's going to work to keep them on that page for longer. And to help them navigate around some more. So how do we do website user testing? Well, there are tools that you can tap into. Usertesting.com is the most obvious one because it does what it says on the tin. Now, you might think that that's for bigger corporates, and perhaps it is because there is going to be a price element involved to testing a website with an audience of, you know, random people, or actually you'll specify exactly who you want to test, and the people you really want to be testing your website are the closest match to your target audience and your ideal customer as possible. But usertesting.com, I did notice they offer a free test for new users, so you can get some eyes on your website, and this is impartial because these are not, you know, this is not your friends and family necessarily. This is just some people coming in to have a play around on your website and report back on what they find. And, you know, that'll be invaluable information for you.
It will.
I think with user testing, you do actually get a little video report back with some findings. So that'd be really helpful.
So that's good from a practical perspective, but in terms of the language that you're using, you wouldn't necessarily get the right feedback unless you actually were getting a potential customer to read it for you. So that is the ideal, isn't it? So rather than a random, which obviously is useful because they can tell you if your links are working and, you know, if it scans and navigates well, but it's not necessarily giving you feedback on the language, is it?
No, not necessarily, but still, you know, all feedback I would argue is, well, not all feedback is good feedback, but it's still helpful. So just some common sense stuff that you might have overlooked yourself. So, and like you say, if there's a broken link or something, then somebody else, it's like when you're proofreading your copy, if you've written the damn thing, then you're probably too close to it already. And you just sort of turn a bit blind to the mistakes in there. And it's the same goes for websites. So just get some different eyeballs on your website. But yes, if you're getting really specific and granular about it, and this is about, you know, you want the feedback about the nuanced details that are really going to help your website attract the right customers and get the right people to your door, then you do need to be testing that with ideal prospects, ideal clients. Past clients might be a good source.
Yes, just to say, I've done a new website, would you just mind having a quick look at it for me? And I'm sure that people would.
Yeah.
But again, it is time consuming, and I think it's something that people perhaps forget or they don't think about.
I think if you are going to ask somebody to test your site, then you also need to be a bit more specific about what feedback you want. You know, be very direct and ask them what feedback you want. Maybe do a questionnaire.
Yeah.
The findings in relation to particular topics.
You know, and obviously the bigger the company, I mean, if you literally look up on Mr. Google website testing companies, I mean, there are companies that will do it. And obviously they will have all sorts of different ways of doing it. And in different conditions, they'll have people who they ask to look for specific things. They'll have people who aren't looking for specific things. They'll just have, you know, they'll do lots of different types of users, I guess. But, you know, again, that can be expensive. But then if you're a big company and you're selling everything online, then it's probably worth you doing that. But for a smaller company, you know, at least if you can do some, and if you get it done for free on usertesting.com, free, then it's a no-brainer, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is all about optimizing because, well, like we said in the last episode, a website isn't something to just set and forget, or, you know, you do that at your sort of peril, really. But you do need to be going back into your website a few times a year and trying to optimize it, trying to make it better, trying to work harder for you. If it's not converting, why is it not converting? And that's, you know, you could ask your user tester, whether that's a friend or a colleague or somebody who's not been on the website before, to actually do a specific role. You know, can you figure out how to book this service with me, and just, you know, see how long it takes them, see where they got stuck, see where they're where they got confused about something. Mm-hmm. There are other ways to test a site as well, through heat maps, things like that, where a heat map would show you where people are clicking on a particular area of the site, so you know where people's eyes are getting drawn and things like that, and what's actually motivating them to click. So heat maps are another way to test
the effectiveness. Yes, I guess if you've got the analytics available for that, then fantastic.
Mm. Yeah. You know, optimization is a part of the process, and this is more relevant for people who already have a website and who are not sure where to start with improving it. So that's all good data for those people.
So that is writing for your customer. And I think, as I say, it's always really good to start with the customer. And then I think in our next episode, we're going to talk about the first sort of three key pages of your website.
The essentials, the non-negotiables, the bits that you absolutely must nail down in order to have a great operational website for your business.
And we're going to do a bit of a deep dive into those, aren't we, next time?
Yeah.
Homepage, we're doing homepage, about page.
Services or contact page.
So tune in to the next episode, and thank you so much for listening.
You have been listening to the Cracking Copy podcast with Ella Hoyos and Minnie McBride.
Don't miss out on future episodes by making sure you hit subscribe down below to keep up with all our podcasts.
And more details and resources are in our show notes.
So we'll see you next time.